Okay, we are holding at the Mishnah on Chof Vav Amud Beis. We learned in the previous Mishnah that you're allowed to eat and drink a snack outside the sukkah. So this Mishnah continues on that topic. Maiseh, one time happened. They brought Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai a bit of a stew to taste. A tapshil, actually, in Gemara terminology, a lot of times means not so much a stew like we think of as like cholent or whatever, but rather something more like fireful or something like that that's made out of chameshus mine dagam, that's made out of something made with grain. Basically something mezonos. So they brought him that to taste. Ulam Gamliel shnei kesavos of lishamayim, and Ulam Gamliel, they brought, maybe they were sitting together, maybe it just means that different times, they brought Rabbi Gamliel two dates and a pail, or delishamayim and a pail of water. Va'amru, and both of them said, halum la'sukkah, bring them up to the sukkah. Rashi explains in Shabbos and in a number of other places the reason why the expression halum is because, like we said yesterday, generally speaking, people build their sukkah on the roof. So the normal expression would be bring it up.
The reason why they built
it? Probably because it was the most convenient place. You have to remember their chatseris, their courtyards, first of all, weren't particularly large, and second of all, they needed them for, they did a lot of things out in their courtyards. They used them for things like milling grain and unloading animals and whatnot, so they may not have had so much room, whereas the roof is a lot of times not used anyway, so it's an out-of-the-way place. The point is, even though you're not chayev to eat either of those things in the sukkah, in the case of the tavshil, even though it's mezonos, but it's only a small amount, it was litzayim to taste. In the case of the dates and the water, Mefarshim discussed the question: are we talking about? Actually, we had this. We learned about this in Yuma a couple of weeks ago. That two kesavos on the face of it are more than a kezayis, which should be the amount you have to eat in the sukkah. But on the other hand, the fact is, we said that they're after all they're fruit, and fruit is never considered a kliyos that you should have to eat in the sukkah. So either way, both Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai and Rabbi Gamliel did not have to eat these things in the sukkah, but they chose to anyway, and the Mishnah is telling us, you're allowed to be machmir on yourself, it's not considered yuara, it's not considered like you're trying to act like a big shot or something. On the other hand, when they gave Rabbi Tzadok food, meaning bread, less than kibetza in size, first of all, Nokloi Bamapa, he took it in a cloth, meaning instead of washing his hands, he just wrapped his hands in a cloth. Now Rashi says that he held it with a cloth partially because of cleanliness. He didn't bother washing his hands. Rashi just says Mishum Nikius. Tosva says no, it's not because of Nikius. He's a Kohen. Everything that he eats. If this was truma, he would have to wash his hands mahalacha, because a person's hands are considered shneir, so a person's hands are midrabanan, a sheni l'truma, and they would make truma a kosel. In the case of cholin, technically they don't. The reason why we wash our hands before bread, the Gemara says in cholin is mishum srach truma, because you don't want people to be confused. People are going to get used to eating bread without washing their hands, and they're going to eat truma without washing their hands too, and make a tummy. In this case, Rab Tzadik was a Kohen, he ate all his food al paras truma. He ate all his food, even his cholin food, as if it had the status of truma. And therefore he would usually wash his hands for that reason alone. But here, where he's eating less than a kibetza, he held you don't have to wash your hands for that. And therefore he just took it in a cloth.
If your tummy, if the reason to wash your hands before you eat how does washing help the...
So midrabanan, minatara, there's no such thing as part of your body being tummy. Minatara, tumma is an all or nothing thing. Midrabanan, though, there's a concept that your hands can be tummy. We learned yesterday, actually, that your diem is scunny, it's hand. A person's hands usually are always busy. A person doesn't usually keep track of what his hands have touched. So midrabanan, sam yadayim, hands where you don't know what the status of them is, are considered a sheni l'tumma. If you were to touch tumma, or kodshim with those hands, you would actually make it possible, or tamei, midrabana. So therefore, so based on that, you should only have to wash when you're eating truma. The chachamim made a takana, mishum srach truma, because you may, in order that you should get used to washing before you eat truma, therefore they also said you should wash before eating cholin. Anyway, so number one, Rav Tzadok took this food in a cloth rather than washing. Number two, v'achalei chutz l'sukkah, he ate it outside the sukkah, because, again, it's less than a kibetza, and the implication is that amount you don't have to eat in the sukkah, that amount is considered a snack. And number three, v'lei beirach acharav, he did not bench after it. There's actually a machloikas in brachas, whether you need to bench after a kezayis or kibetza. The Tzadok held with the opinion that you only bench for a kibetza, and therefore he didn't, and therefore he didn't bench afterwards. On the other hand, Rashi points out he did have to say a bracha before it, because you always have to say a bracha even before you eat even a tiny crumb of food, because you're not allowed to have anah from this world without a bracha. The food belongs to Hashem. The bracha is your payment to Hashem. But a bracha achrayna, there's a shiur. Incidentally, Tosfos discusses over here the issue of what about when it comes to washing then? Given that we're saying that it's not certain whether you bench for kezayis or kibetza, you should wash. The actually what it says in halacha is you should wash even if you're only planning to eat a kezayis of hamotzi bread, but you only make a bracha al mitzvah tadayim if you're intending to eat a kibetza. Because at the time you're washing, you don't know for sure. You might end up not eating, but if you intend to eat a kibetza, only then should you make a. Which also, you know, the implication of that also is that, for example, Shabbos and Yom Tov, when you wash hamotzi, you should make sure to eat a kibetza of bread afterwards.
Kibetza is.
Kibetza is about 2 ounces.
2 ounces.
Yeah. Because that's about an ounce.
Double.
No, a half. A kibetza is twice as high as that. So the Gemara asks, Maisa Lister, you're telling me a story to contradict? Usually when the Mishnah mentions an actual case history, it's to support what we said before. The previous Mishnah said you're allowed to eat a snack outside the sukkah. All of a sudden, we have Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Gamliel, doubt eating a snack in the sukkah. The answer is Chasuri Machzor. The Mishnah is actually missing a phrase. What the Mishnah means to imply is like this. And by the way, I mean, we know, you know, throughout Shas, of course, it's a very common expression. The Gemara will say Chasuri Machzor. Before we discuss, does the Gemara actually mean to say that the Mishnah literally is missing words, like there were supposed to be words, such and such words in there, and just they were left out by mistake? Or does the Gemara just mean, by implication, the Mishnah did not have to say these words because we understand them by implication? Anyway, the Hawk is funny. What the Mishnah means to say is, im bala hachmer al atzmei machmer, if your person wants to be machmer on himself, then he can be machmer, v'less be mishum yura, and it's not considered yura, it's not considered like he's making himself he's making himself out like to be a big shot, somebody who's extra careful in mitzvahs, more than the norm. Well, ma'isa nami, and thus you see a ma'isa also, ha'ivir l'ram gamil, l'rabi yechem and zakai, v'tzim atapshel, that they brought Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai some of a stew to taste. Or Ram Gamliel, Shteker Sabbos, Lishamayim, and Ram Gamliel, they brought the two dates and a pail of water, Va'amru Halam L'Sukkah, and they said, bring them up to the Sukkah. What do we learn from the second part? We learn from the second part, on the other hand, some of the Gemara doesn't spell this last part out, but Mepharshim explained, the flip side of it is also, if a person, on the other hand, is not Machmir on himself like that, and he goes according to the basic din that you are allowed to eat a snack outside the Sukkah, you can't say that he's not medactic for mitzvahs. You can't say on him that he's being careless with mitzvahs. Because you see, you have the example of Reb Tzadok, who went according to the strict letter of the law, and there's no problem with that either. So either way, a person wants to do it, it's fine, basically, the Mishnah is saying. So we said, what?
So we go by
Ram Gamliel and Ram Rechim and Zakkai, right? We're careful, or Minhag Chabad is that we're careful to not even drink water outside the circle, right? We said when they gave Rav Tzadok food less than a kibetza. Incidentally, Mepharshim asked the question, why does the Mishnah use the word oichel? Why not lechem pachas mikibetza? And I don't remember who asks and answers this, but the answer is we said one of the things we said is he took it in a cloth, meaning he didn't wash his hands, but he held it in a cloth. Now, what if it was fruit? Well, if it was fruit, obviously you can eat it outside the sukkah, and obviously there's no Indian of washing. Technically, when we talk about the person is supposed to wash before hamotzi, technically it applies to anything that can become tamei. It should apply to wet food as well. L'maisa, we only do that on Pesach night with karpas. The rest of the time we don't. And in fact, it says in Shulchan Aruch that if a person makes a habit of washing his hands before eating fruit, then he's migase haruach. It's like he's trying to show off. Like look how extra careful I am in mitzvahs. The point is, even if this was fruit, nevertheless, it's okay for a tzaddik, as Rashi says, mitzvah cleanliness, to hold it in a napkin, and it doesn't look like he's being finicky and doesn't look like he's being a gasa ruach, as if he were saying, you know, and if this were more than a kibetza, I would actually be washing for it.
But that's a different.
The main reason we do it by the Seder is latmiya hatinokus, to make the kids curious and make them and then stimulate them to ask the questions, to ask manashana. But the rest of the year, not. Anyway, so we said not lebemapa, that he wrapped up the food in a cloth and ate it. Va'achalichut l'sukkah, and he ate it outside the sukkah. V'la'beirach acharav, and he did not bench after it. So what are we saying? It was less than a kibetza, that's why he ate it outside the sukkah. What would be the implication? Ha kibetza b'oy sukkah. So that would imply, if it was a kibetza of food, then he would have to eat it in the sukkah.
Right.
The problem with that, leiv tevet yufta d'Rabbi Yosef v'Abaye. Should we say then that that is a contradiction to what Rabbi Yosef and Abaye said? We learned yesterday, when we were learning about this oichlin v'shoysin arayach utzul sukkah, how much was that? We said Rabbi Yosef defined it was two or three eggs worth of food, and Abaye says to him, why? Sometimes that's enough to fill up a person. And Abaye says, no, it means a mouthful, the amount that a bar beirav, that a young Talmud Chacham will eat in a hurry before he's going to the shir, to the kala. So according to Rabbi Yosef then, achilas arai is two or three eggs worth of food, and according to Abaye, it's one. Is still considered a snack. Only more than that would be, but here our Mishnah seems to be saying one egg already would be enough, a trigger that he has to eat in the sukkah. The answer is no. Dilma pachas mekabetsa natilo bracha lagbari. Maybe the Mishnah is not so much focusing on the eating in the sukkah. It's true. Even if it were a kibetsa, he would not have to eat it in the sukkah. Because like Abaye is saying, you need more than a kibetsa to trigger that, and according to Rabbi Yosef, even more than that. But the point is, because it was less than a kibetsa, is why he didn't have to wash his hands and why he did not have to bench. Ha kibetsa boi natilo bracha, which would imply, if it was a kibetsa, not necessarily that he'd have to eat it in the sukkah, but that he would have to wash. And he couldn't get away with wrapping it up in a cloth, because as the Altareba says at the end of Hilchos Matilos Shadayim, there is no heter for wrapping up your hands to eat bread. Wrapping up your hands, the Altareba says, works if you're eating, for example, wet fruit or vegetables, or actually, I think the Altareba talks about, for example, like a compote or something, you know, where you have fruit that's stewed in juices. That sort of thing, where technically you're supposed to wash for them, but if you're eating them with a knife or fork, then you don't have to. And also you can wrap up your hands. But to eat bread, you don't have a heter to wrap up your hand to eat bread. You have to wash, unless the Altareba says maybe, according to some opinions, if there's no water within 4 mil of you, then you can get away with it.
I think that although he would have had to wash, he would not have had to eat under the sukkah.
That's what we're saying, because it would still be considered a snack.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's
That's the point.
Yeah.
And, a kibetza, if he ate a kibetza, he would have had to wash and he would have had to bench, but maybe, indeed, he still wouldn't have had to eat in the sukkah. Yeah. Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Arba Esra Sfudah Tchayv Adam Lech B'Sukkah. A person is obligated to eat 14 meals in the sukkah. Achas b'yom v'achas b'layla. You have to do 7 days of sukkahs. You have to eat every day, one by day and one by night.
Meaning washing and bread?
Yes. A sudda is defined as that you wash for bread, yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in the Gemara. It's actually not necessarily so simple, but yeah, that's the assumption right now anyway, yeah. The Chachamim say, no, there's no fixed amount. You do have to eat the first night in the sukkah. That's true. We'll discuss that in the Gemara. But the rest of the days, Rashi puts it in terms, actually, that if the rest of the days, if you want to fast, then it's not a problem. Mefarshim discussed the issue, you're not allowed to fast on Yom Tov and on Chol Hamoed. So therefore, they explain that it doesn't really mean to fast, but it means either that it doesn't mean to fast, it means, like, you know, to get by with fruit or meat or whatever other things that you're not chayav to eat in the sukkah. Or maybe that Rashi even means, from the point of view of sukkah, you could be fasting. It's true. From the point of view of other halachas, namely that you have a mitzvah to be besimcha on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to fast, but that's a different issue. That's not what we're dealing with over here. So the Chacham is saying, no, except for the first night, you don't have any particular chiyuv to eat in the sukkah. Chutz mileli Yom Tov rishon shel chag b'elvad, except for the first night of sukkahs, which we'll learn in the Gemara why we know that that's a chiyuv. Yeah. There was an interesting thing. The Baal Amor asks a question at the end of Masechet Pesachim. He says, we're going to say in the Gemara that the same way as that Sukkot is like Pesach in that regard, the same way Pesach, you only have a mitzvah to eat matzah the first night, the rest of the time it's optional. You can get by during the rest of Pesach on potatoes if you want. The same way sukkah, if you have a mitzvah to eat in the sukkah the first night, eat bread in the sukkah the first night, the rest of the days, if you don't want to eat something that makes you chayiv in sukkah, you don't have to. So why is it every time we eat in the sukkah on sukkahs, we do say bracha loisha basukkah, but every time we eat matzah during Pesach, we don't say bracha al achilas matzah? He says an interesting answer. The Baal Amara asked this question. He answers a very interesting answer. He says, because when you get to Pesach, you could manage to get by the rest of Pesach without matzah, right? You don't necessarily have to eat matzah every day in order to survive. But on the other hand, we know, for example, the Gemara establishes in a number of places that you can't go more than 3 days without sleep. You have a mitzvah to sleep in the sukkah. Okay, we discussed yesterday why our minhag is not to. That's a whole different. But according to halacha and Shulchan Aruch, you do have a mitzvah to sleep in the sukkah unless you're mitzvah. So therefore, necessarily, sometime during the sukkah, the person is going to be going into the sukkah and doing that mitzvah. And therefore, for that reason alone, every time the person is going into the sukkah to eat, then also we can still say that he's being commanded in the mitzvah of sukkah and that he should make the bracha. That Pesach, you could have a person can eat matzah the first night, and then that's it. He doesn't have to eat matzah the rest of Yom Tov, and he'll still be able to survive. But a person is necessarily going to have to sleep sometime during the sukkah. And when a person sleeps, he's supposed to sleep in the sukkah. So therefore, inevitably, you're going to be fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah some other time during the Yom Tov besides the first night. Therefore, that makes it a stronger mitzvah to the point that every time you go into the sukkah during Chol HaMoed or whenever to eat, you are still being mekayim in the mitzvah, and you should say a bracha on it.
When you sleep in the time of the sukkah, we're not making a bracha every time we go to sleep.
No, you don't make a bracha when you actually sleep. That's true. But nevertheless, though, the point is you are fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah throughout the week, and therefore every time you go in to eat, you make a bracha on it. Anyway, va'od amar Rabbi Eliezer, going back to the Mishnah, then Rabbi Eliezer said another thing. Mishalai ochal leila yom tovarishin, somebody who did not eat in the sukkah on the first night of sukkahs, yashlim leila yom tov achon shel chag, then he should make it up on the last night of yom tov, meaning on Shmini Atzeres night. Rashi says that means we're talking about he's not in the sukkah anymore, but still he's making up for that missed meal. So we'll talk about that. We'll get to in the Gemara when we discuss Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. That's part of the question, right? Wait. The Chachamim aim l'gavat tashlumin. The Chachamim say no. There's no makeups over here. You missed it. You missed it. Al bal zanemar. On this kind of thing is what the pasuk says. Ma'ugas lo yochol liska, and something that's crooked cannot be fixed. V'chesra, and something that's missing. Lo yochol imanis cannot be counted.
Well, then you can say the same thing about Pesach and Pesach Sheni.
That's different. The Torah itself gives you a makeup for it.
Yeah.
But other than, I mean, we learn from that in Shtok and Fafalan. But other than that. When you know, as the Altsaber says at the beginning of Yigeret HaTshuva, the difference between missing a mitzvah's essay and violating a mitzvah's lois essay. On the one hand, violating a lois, we learned this at the end of Yoma, violating a lois essay is more severe because you're actually doing something going against what the Eibishter wants. On the other hand, in a way, a mitzvah's essay, the kapara for it is easier because you failed to do something rather than actively doing something wrong. On the other hand, the fact is, with a lois essay, once you do tshuva and you have your kapara, good, you're back in good shape, whereas with a mitzvah eseh, the fact is, you missed bringing down the ur that you're supposed to bring down.
And so then you should reverse the question and say, because of that, the loss is...
No, so therefore, all it is, when that's out, the distinction the Alphabet makes is as far as kapara versus as far as making up what you missed. When it comes to kapara, a loisa says more severe. That's why you actually need that's why you need more than we learned at the end of Yoma. Mitzvah essay, all you need is truva. In as well as Mishamat Shemarifim. Loisa say you got to wait for Yom Kippur. But on the other hand, when it comes to making up what you missed, a loisa say you're able to make up what you missed. An essay, you're really not. Yeah. So Gemara asks, my time of the Rabbi Eliezer. What is Rabbi Eliezer's reason that he says you have to actually eat 14 meals in the sukkah? Because he says teishvu kein yaduru. Like we learned yesterday, the Torah says you have to sit in the sukkah, basukkah teishvu shivas yamim. We learned from that has to be kein taduru, the same way as you live in your house the rest of the year. Well then, madira achas bayayim ba'achas ba'layla, so just like when you live in your house, you eat two meals a day, one by night, afsukkah achas bayayim ba'achas ba'layla, the same thing it has to be in the sukkah. So you're only fulfilling the mitzvah by actually eating 14 meals in the sukkah.
Including Shabbos?
So one second. So actually, a bunch of the Mefarshim ask, wait a minute, if you have 7 days of Sukkot, One of those days of Easter Shabbos, you have to eat Shalosh Shudas. You have 15 meals then.
Right.
And the Magen Avraham actually points out, we can also prove from this, on the other hand, that you don't have to eat Shalosh Shudas on Yom Tov. Because if you have to eat Shalosh Shudas on Yom Tov, you'd have 16. Not Marka, that's a regular night meal.
Well,
and also Malav Malka is not such a chiyuv. It's a nice minhag, but it's nice. So one second, so I'll tell you. So first of all, as far as this, that the Magen Avraham, what?
Is a chiyuv?
To take a meal? No, I mean, yeah, it's a normal thing. You eat on Thursday night, you eat on Friday day,
right.
And then your next meal is Friday night. But, so I'll tell you, I mean, a number of Mepharshim discussed this issue. First of all, as far as what the Magen Avraham is saying, other Mepharshim counter, it's not really such a proof. Because, for one thing, when a person eats Shalosh Shudas late in the day Shabbos, not necessarily, therefore, are they going to be eating that night. They may well skip a lot of Malka because they're full. So therefore, you're still back down to 15, even if you have to eat Shalosh Shudas on Yom Tov. Besides that also, and the Rebbe points this out in the Sicha, I mean, you could have, so what if the first day of Sukkot comes out on Shabbos, then you don't have an extra meal anyway. You have one extra meal for Shabbos, maybe you have Shalosh Shudas, but you anyway wouldn't have an extra meal for Yom Tov. So there's no reason why Rabbi Eliezer has to mention 16, but why is he not mentioning 15? What about Shalosh Shudas of Shabbos? So like I say, one answer is because if you're eating Shalosh Shudas on Shabbos, you're likely not to eat a meal Matzah Shabbos because you'll be full. There's a number of other reasons that are given, but one very interesting one that Rebbe talks about in a Sicha is because Rabbi Eliezer actually holds, we learned this in Sochim, that Rabbi Eliezer holds most Yom Tovim, it's either Lashem or Lachem. Either you spend the day of Yom Tov eating and drinking and enjoying yourself, or you spend the day in shul, davening and learning. It's not one or the other, except the Gemara says there. Shavuos is different. Even Rabbi Eliezer agrees that Shavuos, you have to have Lachem, because we have to celebrate that the Torah was given, but the other Yom Tovim. So therefore, it can well happen, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Yes, you can have, therefore, you're eating your meal the first night of Yom Tov, but you might well skip your meal, or not your fast. You can't fast on Yom Tov, but you won't eat a proper meal on the daytime of Yom Tov. On the other hand, the Shabbos that comes out during Yom Tov, you will eat Shalosh Shudas, and therefore you have 14.
You can also say a
little, but that doesn't mean you're going to skip your one meal of the day. It's true. Mepharshim do talk about. We learned in Sachim that you're supposed to not eat a while before the Seder in order that you'll have an appetite for the matzah. So they talk about does the same thing apply eating before Sukkot in order that you should have an appetite for eating in the Sukkot? Yeah. Okay. So there is that. Anyway. Rabbanan, what are the Rabbanan answer to that? They say, on the contrary, Kedira. Yeah, we agree with you that Keshu means Kein Taduru. You have to live in the Sukkah like you live in your house. But on the contrary, just like when you're living at home, you don't have to eat two meals a day. If you want, you eat them. And if you don't want, you don't eat them. Same thing with Sukkah. You don't have to eat two meals a day. If you want, you eat as much as you want. You don't want, you want to eat fruit for a couple of days because of the hay. Question is, well, if so, then why don't you say the same thing about the first night? Why do the Chachamim then agree in the Mishnah that the first night you do have an absolute chiyuv? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Ben Yair Tzadok, because we have a Gzeira Shava. Nema kan chamisha osav, and nema chamisha osav chagamatis. The Torah describes that Sukkot is the 15th day of Tishrei, and the Torah also describes that Pesach is the 15th night of Nisan, so we make a Gzeira Shava. Just like when it comes to Pesach, only the first night do you have a chiyuv to eat matzah. The rest of the days is Rishus. And Rashi explains, we learned at the end of Sochim, how taka do we know that? Because we have one pasuk that says, Sheshes yamim toichal matzah, you should eat matzahs for 6 days, which implies, therefore, that the seventh day is Rishus. The seventh day you don't have to eat, and we actually lo l'lamud al atzma yasa. This is one of Rabbi Shmuel's Yud Gimel Midas, that when the seventh one is excluded, it's not just coming to teach on itself; it comes to teach on all the previous days also that you're potter from eating matzah. Except, so therefore, based on that, you would say you're potter from eating matzah throughout Pesach. But since the Torah also says erev toich l'matzahs, it means on the first night you do have an absolute chiyuv to eat matzah, but the rest of the days is rishus. So the same thing, Afkan, Laila, Arish, and Chayva, the same thing over here, eating in the Sukkah the first night is a Chayv, Mikan, Ve'elach, Rishus. And from then on it's Rishus. How do we know by matzah that it's a chiyuv the first night? Because Omar Krob, the Erev Tzarich L'matzah, because the Pasuk does say that evening you have to eat matzah, Hakatz of Kovri Chayvah. So the Pasuk establishes that the night of the 15th of Nisan, you must eat matzah. But the rest of Pesach, it's up to you. If you don't want to eat matzah, don't. So the same thing, Sukkot, the Chachamim are saying, based on that Zeder Shavah, the first night you must eat in the Sukkah, the other night it's up to you.
By implication, if the Torah says on the first night of Pesach, you have to eat it. Not necessarily,
because maybe you would say prior to Teruch L'Matzos, but the rest of the day is also. But because the Torah says Sheishas Yomim Teruch L'Matzos instead of Shivas Yomim Teruch L'Matzos, so we learn that one day is excluded, and once you say one day is excluded, then all of them are excluded.
So why the Torah doesn't say straightforward the Yom HaRishon Teruch L'Matzos?
That's the thing. The Torah says, "Prior to Teruch L'Matzos," just to tell us that you don't think because of that Sheishas Yamim Teruch L'Matzos, don't think all of Pesach is optional. You do have one time when it's a chayv, namely the first night. But that's it. Yeah. Then we said in the mission of Odom Rabbi Eliezer, so Rabbi Eliezer said two things. First, Rabbi Eliezer started by saying that you have to eat 14 meals in the sukkah. Incidentally, in that sikha, the Rebbe quotes something from the Tzemach Tzedek that the halacha is not in fact like Rabbi Eliezer, but still, the Tzemach Tzedek says a vort on it. We know the pasuk says, Hashem silcha al yad yiminecha. Hashem is your shadow by your right hand. Now, we know what's the whole purpose of the sukkah. We learned back in the first parak over and over. The main purpose of sukkah has to be for tzel. The schach has to have been placed on there. It doesn't have to be placed on there the shade mitzvah, but it has to be placed on there the shade tzel for the sake of shade. In the tzel of that sukkah, then, Hashem tzilcha, you have to have al yad yiminecha. You have to have 14 yad meals.
You got it.
You got it. Yes. That's the same thing. That's the same. Then we said, V'odomer Rabbi Eliezer, that Rabbi Eliezer said another thing, that if a person missed the first night, then he makes it up for Shmini Atzeres night. What do you mean? What do you mean making up? V'odomer Rabbi Eliezer, Abba Atzisudas, Chayvadam Lachabasuda, Achas Behem Achas Alayla. What do you mean? What do you mean making up? Rabbi Eliezer said that you have to eat 14 meals in the sukkah. Which the point is, Rashi explains, the point of the question is, you're not sitting in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres. We sit in the sukkah, we chutznik sit in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres. We'll learn in the fourth parak, the reason for that is because of Sfeika Diyayva. Because after all, technically, Shmini Atzeres could be the seventh day Sukkot. That's the whole reason why we have 2 days Yom Tov. Yeah, outside Eretz Yisrael. But in Eretz Yisrael, they don't sit in the Sukkot Shmini Atzeres. In fact, on the contrary, if a person were to sit in the Sukkot Shmini Atzeres, meaning to do the mitzvah, he'd be over on Baal Tosif. Or at least seemingly, he would be over on Baal Tosif. Actually, that itself is not so simple. The Gemara ends up saying in Rosh Hashanah that you're only over on Baal Tosif if you're intending to actually do the mitzvah.
Extra,
yeah. So in other words, if a person is sitting in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres without any particular intention in mind, then it's not Baal Tosif. But if a person sits in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres or outside of Yisrael Shesimcha Atzeres, meaning intending, you know what, I know the Torah says that you're supposed to do it for 7 days, but I want to extend it to 8 days, that would be an issue of Baal Tosif. So then, how is he making up anything Shmini Atzeres night if he's not sitting in the sukkah anyway?
Also, I think it's saying that all throughout Israel that today what we have in Israel is considered we're acting like it's in Israel what God gave us in those boundaries and that.
Yes, I mean you're talking about where we keep 1 versus 2 days of Yom Tov. Yeah, I mean, technically, the truth is, there are different opinions about it. There are different opinions about it. For example, yeah, as far as Eilat, which it's very questionable whether it belongs to Eretz Yisrael in the time, whether it was originally part of Eretz Yisrael. There is a bit of a discussion whether you keep 1 or 2 days of Eretz Yisrael in Eilat. The Rambam actually has a different shit on it anyway. The Rambam says it has nothing to do per se with whether it's part of Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam says it just depends strictly on, is this place known to have been lived in during the time of the second base of Mikdash, when they were Makadosh al-Bi'ariyah, and it's within 10 days or so travel of Yerushalayim. According to the Rambam, for example, let's say Kfar Chabad, even though it's only a couple of days distance from Yerushalayim, would actually have to keep 2 days Yom Tov, because it wasn't settled in the time of the second base of Mikdash, so not necessarily the Shulchan get there.
Yeah.
What?
A lot was settled.
It's just, yes, at times it was. We find it mentioned in Sukkim. we find a mention in Pesukim, but yeah, anyway, I mean, Allah is not like the Rambam in that regard, but yeah. No, anyway, we'll talk about this more another time. Anyway, so Rashi explains the point of the question is, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you have to eat your meals in the sukkah, so you're not eating Shmini Atzeres in the sukkah, so what are you making up by it? Tosfos explains differently. The question actually is, if according to Rabbi Eliezer, you have to eat 14 meals during the 7 days, forget about in the sukkah or outside the sukkah. Fine, let's say he'll allow you to sit in the sukkah under those circumstances. But the 7 days of sukkahs are over. What are you accomplishing? What kind of making up? Yeah. Omar Bira, Omar Rabami, you're right. Chazabar Rabbi Eliezer. So Bira, that was his name, says the name of Rabami. You're right. Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind. Rabbi Eliezer came to agree with the Chachamim that there's no fixed number of meals you must eat in the sukkah. You only have to eat in the sukkah on the first night. So now, what is he arguing on them? He's still arguing with them. You, Chachamim, are saying you have to eat not on the first night. I agree with that, but I'm saying if a person missed that first night, then at least he can make it up Shmini Atzeres. That's what we're saying, because we see that from the fact that he's saying effectively that you don't have to eat all 14 meals during sukkahs in the sukkah. You see that according to him, you missed the first night, you have a chance to make it up. That means you only ate 13 meals during the 7 days of sukkahs.
Doesn't require 14.
That's what we're saying. That shows that he changed his mind.
Because the last meal he would be outside sukkahs.
Yeah.
But he forgot to eat that meal.
No, so that's the thing. According to, we're saying that. So actually, that's the thing. So Rashi and Tosfos discuss and argue what we mean that Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind on. Rashi is the one who says that it means that Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind and said you taka don't need 14 sukkahs, you just need to eat in the sukkah the first night. However, Rabbi Eliezer is saying you do have a chance to make that up, even that up. The rest of the meal, the rest of the days, you taka don't have to eat in the sukkah at all. The first night, if you're supposed to eat in the sukkah, but if you didn't, you make it up Shmini Atzeres. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos learns, Rabbi Eliezer still says you have to eat 14 sukkahs. He's just saying you don't necessarily have to eat them all in the sukkah. So therefore, you miss the one on the first night. You're able to make it up Shmini Atzeres night, even though you're not sitting in the sukkah.
Was it Rashi, in other words, you see that he would change his mind because otherwise he would have said
if you missed any of them, right, then yeah. Right. Now, the question, though, is mashlim amai. When we say he's making it up, what are you making it up with? Ilema b'rifta. You're saying, for example, that Shmini Atzeres night he's going to make it up by eating bread. How does that help? Suda d'yemekachal. I mean, you're eating the suda that you have to eat Shmini Atzeres night anyway. What would we be talking about? You know, he eats a meal, benches, and has in mind that he's going to eat another meal. After that, you're not supposed to do that. Elamai yashlim. So what does it mean? He should make it up. Yashlim aminei tavdima. Normally, yes, like you asked him about in the Mishnah, usually a suddah means made up of bread. But here we're saying, when we're talking about making up mis suddah, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it means you make it up with minei tavdima. What is minei tavdima? Rashi says it means like side dishes that you would normally eat with bread. So Tosfos understands Rashi to mean it means things like fruit, like fruit, various kinds of desserts. Tosfos himself says that no, it doesn't mean desserts. It does mean things that go along with bread, like meat and fish and whatever. So therefore, the point is, Mefarshim explain according to Rashi, these kinds of things, desserts, are called dvarim habayim shaloy machmas asoda. These are things that you're not eating them as part of the meal. They're a separate thing of their own anyway. We know, mice and b'chol yom, that a person has their Shabbos meal and has dessert at the end of it. You make a bracha on the dessert, even though it's before benching, because not boim machmas asoda, right? Why are we saying you shouldn't eat a whole other meal? Because you're not supposed to make extra brachas for no reason. But if you're eating dessert, you're anyway going to be making brachas on the dessert. So then, so that's what we're saying. Make it up with that. You're making it up by having an extra dessert that otherwise you wouldn't have. And the fact that it's extra brachas, you're saying the extra, but you would have said the extra brachas no matter what, because of the dessert alone. No, we're talking about he missed the actual meal. He missed eating the kazayas or kebetza in the sukkah. So now he's eating fruit, according to Rashi, and Shmini Atzeres, to make up for it. Yeah. Rashi also points out, by the way, that Rabbi Eliezer is figuring like this. The same way as, for example, you have the korbanos that you're supposed to bring, the korban chagiga you're supposed to bring on the first day of Sukkot, but if you missed it, you have up until and including Shmini Atzeres to bring it. By the same logic, if you miss eating on the Sukkot, the first night of Sukkot, you have up until Shmini Atzeres to make it up. Whereas the Chachamim counter, where the Rashi doesn't explain this part, but other Mepharshim explain that the Chachamim counter, why are you comparing it to the Chagiga? Compare it to the Korbanot Tzibur. You miss the Korbanot Tzibur on the first day of Sukkot, that's it. You don't have a makeup for them.
Why not to the Chagiga?
They argue that instead of comparing it to the Chagiga, compare it to each day has its own Chiyuv. The Gemara tells a story. Shol apotrupus shel Agrippas HaMelech as Rabbi Eliezer. The caretaker of Agrippas HaMelech of his estates and whatever asked Rabbi Eliezer like this. Suppose you have somebody like me who usually only eats one meal every day. So can I just eat one meal a day and that's it? I'll be potter because that's teishvul kein yaduru for me. I'm alive. So Rabbi Eliezer tells him, listen. Every day, yes, you only have one major meal a day, but you eat a whole bunch of appetizers before it to whet your appetite, so that you'll eat a nice amount for your own cupboard. So now you can't add one extra appetizer in order to whet your appetite to eat another meal for the cupboard of the Eberste. Yes, go do that, even though that's not what you normally do. This same apotropos asks Rabbi Eliezer another question. He says, suppose you have somebody like me, she actually shtei noshim, I have two wives, achas b'Tveria v'achas b'Tzipori, one in Tveria, one in Tzipori, which are a few miles apart, but you know, you're going to have two wives, it's probably a sensible thing to do. V'yeshli shtei sukkas, achas b'Tveria v'achas b'Tzipori, and I have two sukkas, one in each place. Can I leave one sukkah and go to the other one and be potter? Now this apotropos, the Aruch HaNer points out, this apotropos knew that Rabbi Eliezer says, as Rabbi Eliezer is going to say in a second, that you're supposed to stay in one sukkah throughout the whole 7 days of sukkah, which is not halacha, by the way. We'll talk about it more on Amud Beis. But this apotropos was a smart guy. He knew Rabbi Eliezer's shitta, that he holds you're not supposed to leave one sukkah for another. But he thought maybe, you know what maybe that is? Again, teishvu kein yaduru. A person normally doesn't move from one day to the next. So therefore, you know, normally a person should stay put all of Sukkot. Me, I'm constantly going back and forth between my two wives anyway. So maybe for me, Teshuvah Kein Tadurdu is to go back and forth, to switch off between the two Sukkot.
It almost seems to me that this could have almost been a intellectual pursuit that he was doing. He said, oh yeah, I have two wives, and what's the case?
No, it sounds like he's actually asking a real practical issue for himself. Yeah. I mean, he's the apotropos shel Agrippas HaMelech. I mean, he's the caretaker. He's the, you know, he's the chief of staff of all of King Agrippas's not just he's not going to lie, but more to the point is he's obviously a well-to-do guy. Yeah, it's very possible that he has two households in different places. You know, he's rich enough to be able to keep him up, probably.
What about the fact that you have to eat? Yeah, when you eat bread, you're not eating the sukkah. How are we going to eat a regular meal during those 7 days? We have to go and...
That's what we're talking about. He's saying, should I, for example, can I spend the first day of Sukkot in Tveria by wife number one, and then the first day of Chalamaya drive over to...
The first question, that must be one meal, right?
Yes.
But what about the fact that during the whole week, normally it's going to be, forget about this... normal meal with bread.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. He says instead of you, Rabbi Eliezer, I have to eat 14 meals in the sukkah. In this case, I propose to eat only 7 meals in the sukkah because that's normally what I eat, one a day. This is obviously before Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind. Again, according to Rashi's understanding that Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind and said you don't have to eat 14 meals in the sukkah, then obviously the question has to be before Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind. According to Tosfos, that Rabbi Eliezer still continued to hold that you have to eat 14 meals. He just didn't hold that all 14 have to be in the sukkah, therefore you're able to make up one on Shmini Atzeres, then this question could have even been asked, could have even been later on also.
What are you accomplishing by having 14 meals if you don't have to have it in the sukkah?
Because that's what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. If it happens that one of those 14 meals you miss having in the sukkah, then you make it up by having extra fruit, or according to Tosfos, actually meat and fish, or whatever, in the meal of Shmini Atzeres. Anyway, So the guy is asking about going back and forth between one sukkah and another. Amalai, so Rabbi Eliezer tells him, Loi, no, you should not do that. Shani Omer, I actually say, Kol ha-yotzim is sukkah l'sukkah. If a person leaves one sukkah and goes to another one, bitul mitzvah sha-rishayna. He's mevatel the mitzvah of the first one. Which Rashi says, what that means is, even, so the guy has been in one sukkah for 6 days, and now he moves to another sukkah for the seventh day, for Shafari Shana Rabba, he loses the mitzvah that he had all the first 6 days in the first sukkah. No, he learns it actually from a different pasuk. We'll learn on Amud Beis why. That's the thing. The guy, the apotropos, thought it's because of Teshuvah came to Duru. Well, my came to Duru is to go back and forth. But Rabbi Eliezer tells him that's not the reason. It's not because of Teshuvah came to Duru. It's because of the pasuk that implies that you have to be in the same sukkah for 7 days. Tani Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, in yotzin the sukkah l'sukkah, you're not allowed to leave one sukkah and go to another sukkah. And you're also not allowed to make a sukkah on Chol HaMoed. So if you have somebody who, for whatever reason, did not sit in the sukkah the first day of sukkahs, let's say, so he's not allowed to build one during Chol HaMoed to sit in. The Chacham say, no, you can leave one sukkah. You can go sukkah hopping. You can go from one sukkah to another. But Oisin sukkah b'chol HaShamoed, and you can make a sukkah on Chol HaMoed, which is Takad Halacha. You're allowed to make a sukkah even for a short time. That's the pop-up sukkahs they have nowadays, for example. The Shavim, both of them do agree, She'im Nafla, that if your sukkah fell down during sukkah, Shechayzer Bona B'chol HaShamayit, that you are allowed to rebuild it during Chol HaMoed. Even Rabbi Eliezer will agree that that's still considered a continuation of the same sukkah. So my time is Rabbi Eliezer. So what's Rabbi Eliezer's reason that he says that you can't go from one sukkah to another? Amakra, because the pasuk says Chagas sukkah tasa chashivas yomim. It says you should make for yourself a yomtiv of sukkah 7 days, which implies asay sukkah haruoyin l'shiva. You have to make a sukkah which is suitable for all 7 days. So if you, or not really, actually, Agnosis says over here on the side that the word haru'uya should really be taken out. Of course, the sukkah has to be suitable for 7 days. We learned a few daf ago during one of the days when I was away that if you have a sukkah that's going to fall down on a normal wind, then everybody agrees it's not a sukkah. But it has to be a sukkah that is actually for 7 days, that you're actually in that same sukkah all 7 days. Therefore, you can't move from sukkah to sukkah. So that's why he's saying if you move from one sukkah to another, you lost the mitzvah of the first sukkah because you're not in the same sukkah for 7 days. But Rabbanan, what are the Rabbanan answer to that? They say, Hachikam Rahmana. On the contrary, what the pasuk means is, Asay Sukkah B'chag. It means you have 7 days during which a sukkah can be made. Any one of those 7 days, you can make a sukkah. So just the opposite, yeah. Well, obviously you can't make it on Shabbos, but the point is you can go to a different sukkah on Shabbos. Then we said we said they both agree that if the sukkah falls down, you can rebuild it on Chol HaMoed. Question is pshita. Well, of course, that was a sukkah that was meant for 7 days. The answer is ma'od kema. Still, you might have said ha'yachritihi. Still, you might have said this is considered a different sukkah. Ve'ein l'shiva. Now you don't have a sukkah for 7 days anymore. Kamash malam. Therefore, the chiddush that even Rabbi Eliezer will agree that's okay. Tosfos points out a girsa that they had in some manuscripts of the Gemara that said that actually, that when does Rabbi Eliezer say it's considered the same sukkah if you actually rebuilt it with the same materials? But in other words, if you had rebuilt it with different materials, then it wouldn't necessarily be, according to Rabbi Eliezer, a continuation of the previous sukkah.
And if you add new materials together with the old ones?
That they don't talk about. I guess, well, as long as the old materials are enough to make a sukkah on their own. There are also some of the Rishonim, the Ra'ah, I think, and the Ritva that mention a girsa that the chiddush is that you might have thought if Rabbi Eliezer is saying you're allowed to rebuild your sukkah during Chol HaMoed, you might have thought maybe you shouldn't be allowed to, because then if you do, you might l'chatchila make your sukkah too weak to stand the 7 days. The chiddush is we're not worried about that. We're not worried about somebody being so careless. You're allowed to. They themselves don't like that girsa, but that's what it would mean. Incidentally, also, Mefarshim discussed the question. Or are you even allowed to build a sukkah on Chol HaMoed anyway? Don't have the problem of doing lacha on Chol HaMoed. So one way of looking at it is that you're allowed to do it if it's not ma'aseh uman, if it's not a craftsman's work, if it's like, you know, the kind of thing that, you know, anybody can build a sukkah. It's not considered the kind of craftsmanship that's also on Chol HaMoed. The other way of looking at it is since you need it for the mitzvah, then yeah, even if it's craftsmanship, you know, you need it for the mitzvah. Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yazaimer, Kashem Shein Anam Yotzi Yedei Chavasi B'yem Tavirishin Shachag V'lulav B'shachabei, right? Just like, as we know, a person cannot be Yotzi the mitzvah of lulav on the first day of Sukkot with somebody else's lulav. Yichtiv L'kachtem L'chem B'yem Tavirishin Priyei Tzadokachas Tmarim. It says you take for yourself on the first day, a fruit, a prietader, the branch of the palm leaf, a palm leaf, which means mishalachem. The lachem means it has to be mishalachem, it has to be yours. Yeah. Similarly, kach einon of yotzi yedei chavasa b'sukkos ha-shachaber. So also, a person cannot be yotzi on sukkos with somebody else's sukkah. Dichtiv chagat sukkos tasa l'chashi b'asyamim. And again, l'cham means mishalachah, the sukkah has to be yours. Even though it's true, we say a person is not allowed to be yotze on the first day of Sukkot with somebody else's lulav. But a person can be yotze with somebody else's sukkah. Why? Because we have a different pasuk. It says all of the ezrach, literally means the native born among the Jewish people, should sit in Sukkot. Kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael implies melamed shekol Yisrael ruim la'ishu b'sukkah achas. It teaches us that all Jewish people are able to live in one sukkah. Now Rashi points out, what does that mean? Suppose you had one sukkah so we're not talking about a sukkah that's large enough to fit the entire Jewish people at once necessarily. We're talking about it could even be a smaller sukkah. They take turns going in and out. But it might actually be that each one of them doesn't even own a shava prutta of that sukkah, and yet we're saying that they're allowed to sit in it. Therefore, it shows it doesn't need to be your sukkah. Tosfos discusses differently that when it says l'cha would mean that it can't belong to partners. We have a number of other dinim where that's true. So therefore, the Torah is saying kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael implies everybody can be partners in the sukkah. That shows that it overrides the l'cha, what Rabbi Eliezer is understanding from the word l'cha. The famous thing that Rebbe used to quote this all the time, this expression, Ruyim Kol Yisrael Leishu B'Sukkah Achas, that it represents the idea that sukkah is one of the three levels of achdus that we go through during the Yom Tov of Tishrei. You have the achdus of Yom Kippur, Achas Bashana, the one Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on behalf of the Jewish people. You have the achdus of sukkah, Kol Yisrael B'Sukkah Achas, and you have the achdus of the Dalet Minim, where you have the four different Minim are joined together. Each one remaining its own kind of min, but they're all joined together. No, so that he used the Shiva Sayyamim for that, but the L'cha he didn't use for that. No, he does use the L'cha. He's using the L'cha to mean that the sukkah has to actually belong to you. Therefore, you can't borrow somebody else's sukkah according to him. Now the question is, Rabbanon hai l'cha mai darshi bei? Okay, what do the Rabbanon do with the word l'cha? The answer is, mibay le'le mo'utik zula. They use it to say that you're not allowed to sit in a stall in sukkah, which we'll learn in the next perek about lulav agazel. We'll learn about using things for a mitzvah that are stolen. We'll talk actually about a lulav, about a sukkah, but there's actually a few different kinds of stolen sukkah. There can be a case where a person, for example, steals wood and uses it to make a sukkah. There can be a case where a person steals a sukkah, let's say, by taking somebody and throwing him out of his own sukkah and sitting in it. And then there can be stealing a sukkah by building it on somebody else's property. We'll talk about in a few days about the pros and cons of all of those. Anyway, there is a kind of sukkah, which is gzula, which you're not allowed to sit in. That's the kind that's the Torah saying l'cha to imply that you can't use that one. Aval sha'ula, but a borrowed sukkah, you're allowed to, because again, k'siv kala ezrach, because it says this pasuk kala ezrach, that all the Jewish people can live in one sukkah, and not necessarily that means that some of them may be borrowing it from each other. Vir Rabbi Eliezer, hi kala ezrach, my Avad. Now we have the opposite problem. What, according to Rabbi Eliezer, what does he do with the word kala ezrach? The answer is Mibarilei. He uses it to teach us Legershinis Gair Bentayim. What if you have somebody who became a ger during Chalamayit, the Kotnishinis Gadol Bentayim, or a child who became Gadol, he grew to Cyrus during Chalamayit. So we're saying, normally Rabbi Eliezer is saying you need a sukkah that's roiv, that you actually use for the whole 7 days. In this case, the person was not shayach to the mitzvah beforehand, because they were a goy or a katan, as the case may be. So therefore, he agrees in that case they are allowed to build a sukkah during Chol HaMoed and use it for the rest of the days of sukkah.
Does Sanhedrin convene during Chol HaMoed, or could they even convene during Chol HaMoed?
Well, you don't actually need a Sanhedrin in order to be Magai or a person. All you need is based in a free.
But like,
The pashtus is that,
On
Yom Tov and on Shabbos, they can't put them during Chol Moed. Apparently, it's not an issue. The truth is, it depends. Actually, we'll learn about in Moed Katan. There are many things that Beis Din is not supposed to do during Chol Moed. Mainly, anything that has to do with writing. Actually, even that, not so. I think there might be Beis Din, if necessary, you are allowed to write during Chol Moed. Be that as it may, Gneiros doesn't necessarily involve writing. I mean, nowadays, the practical matter, they give a Ger certificate because, you know, a person needs to bring proof for himself. But in principle, you know, according to black letter halacha, you don't really need that. As long as you have people to vouch for you, whatever. Anyway, so therefore, that's the Kol HaEzrach comes to teach us that, yeah, there are cases where Rabbi Eliezer is saying that, yeah, somebody is now an Ezrach, where before they weren't, and therefore now they're allowed to build a sukkah. Rabbanan, what would the Rabbanan answer to that? They say you don't need that. Kivin Sha'amrois and Sukkah B'chol HaShamayid. We said that anybody's allowed to build a Sukkah on Chol HaMoed, even if you were Chayiv in Sukkah beforehand. Well, therefore, it's Jechras, and therefore we don't need an extra pasuk to tell us that the cotton or the ger is allowed to, because of course, even if they weren't a cotton or a ger, they'd be allowed to. So therefore, both Lacha and the Kol HaEzrach are settled according to everybody, and therefore we have the Machlek. We learn in a Braisa, going back to this thing that Rabbi Eliezer was saying that you're not supposed to leave one sukkah for another one. It once happened with Rabbi Loi that he went to greet Rabbi Eliezer, his Rebbe, in Lud. Lud was the city where Rabbi Eliezer was the Rav. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, Acher Rabbi Eliezer, the Lud. Yeah, indeed.
Was it the same Lud as today?
Yeah. Who says that? I don't know what you're talking about. There were no Yidden in what's now Kfachabad. Or there may have been, but we don't know. But there were Yidden in Lod, yes. So this Rabbi Loi went to visit Rabbi Eliezer in Lod on Yom Tov. Amaloi, Rabbi Eliezer tells him, Eloi, incham shoyv se'aregel, aren't you one of those people who stays and rests at home during Yom Tov? Rashi says, why aren't you back home with your wife? But Shahayah Rabbi Eliezer Omer, because Rabbi Eliezer used to say, "Shabeach ani asat lonin." I praise the lazy people, she'en yotzin mevatein beragel, that they don't leave their houses on Yom Tov. Dichtiv v'samachta ator besacha, because the pasuk says you and your household should be happy together. So you have no business leaving your house during Yom Tov. But Farshim point out, I think the Aruch Haner says that it's a funny kind of expression, "Shabeach ani asat lonin." He says the vort is obviously if a person is staying home because he knows of this inyan, of course that's a good thing. We're saying even somebody who is just staying home because he's lazy, nevertheless he's not doing it lishma, but he's still accomplishing the mitzvah, and Rabbi Eliezer praises him for that. And what says, what do you mean, Eini? How could that be? You're not supposed to leave your house during Yom Tov. How do we know that a person is chayev to go and greet his Rebbe on Yom Tov? Shenema, because the pasuk says, Madua ate lechas elav. This is in the story of the Shunamis in the Torah Parshas Vayera. Her husband, her son has just had sunstroke or whatever it is. She's running to Elisha to ask him to be Mechai Mesim. So her husband, she doesn't want to tell her husband what's going on. She just tells him, I need to go see the Navi. He asks her, why? Madua ate lechas elav hayom? Why are you going into him today? Lo chodesh v'lo Shabbos. It's not Rosh Chodesh and it's not Shabbos. Michlal, which the implication is, v'chodesh v'shabbos, mechayev inish, lak v'lo apir rabbi, that if it was Rosh Chodesh or Shabbos, he would be chayev to greet his Rebbe. Mepharshim have a field day, by the way, with if the pasuk is mentioning chodesh and Shabbos, then why are we saying beregel? What are we saying? That the person is chayev to be makab upon him of his Rebbe, but regel, if the pasuk is saying chodesh and Shabbos. There's many, many different answers to that. I mean, the Marsha says, kind of, you know, balabatish answer. If you're supposed to greet him on Shabbos and on Rosh Chodesh, how much more so on Yom Tov? If you're supposed to greet him on Rosh Chodesh, kav chomer on Yom Tov.
But what is the woman going to do? What about the husband? Why would he?
That's the thing. He was saying it's loy chodesh v'loy Shabbos. If it was chodesh or Shabbos, we'd both be going. But it's neither chodesh nor Shabbos. So what's the rush? No, he doesn't. That's the thing. He was out in the field with the kid. The kid says roshi, my head is killing me. Taken back to his mother at home with his mother is where he died. She didn't want to tell her husband because she didn't want to say out that he's dead. You know, words have power. Anyway, so among the many, many different answers that Mepharshim give, the Chanukah Satorah from Rav Heschel gives a very interesting answer. He says, we learn in Kiddushin, in Kiddushin where it talks about the dinim of Yichud, you have that a woman shouldn't be around where there were a lot of Bacharim, or a lot of Yeshiva Bacharim. Even if it's not technically an issue of Yichud, there still can be an issue of Hirud. So on the contrary, when would she go to Elisha on Chodesh and Shabbos when the Talmidim are not there? On Regel, she would not go because the Talmidim are there. Therefore, we see that the Talmidim are supposed to be there, but Regel. And the Noda B'Yehuda gives another answer. I don't want to go through all the answers, and frankly, I don't remember many of them, but the Noda B'Yehuda gives another interesting answer. He says, the kavod of your Rebbe, we learn in a different place, the Gemara says, should not be greater than the kavod of the Eivishter. That's why, for example, we know you have a mitzvah to stand up for your Rebbe, but you don't do it more than shachris v'arvis, more than once in the morning and once in the evening, because the kavod of your Rebbe shouldn't be greater than kavod shamayim, that you say shema shachris v'arvis. So therefore, in the time of the Beis Mikdash, people would go to the Beis Mikdash for the Shalosh Regalim, therefore you go to greet your Rebbe also. Nowadays, that there's no Beis Mikdash, then you know the Yitaka don't go on Regalim. You go at other times. And he says an interesting thing. This is why the Rambam brings this halacha that you have to be mechal upon him beregel, but the Shulchan Aruch does not. Why? Because the Rambam, we know, talks about dinim that are negeya when there's a Beis Mikdash and when there's not. Whereas the Shulchan Aruch only deals with dinim that are negeya nowadays. Nowadays, no Beis Mikdash, so therefore you're not greeting the Eibishtah on the Shalosh Regalim. You don't necessarily have to go and greet your Rebbe either. There's also the Ritva talks about that the Ritva talks about, and actually based on the next line of the Gemara, that there was a difference also between whether there's a difference between your Shchodesh and Shabbos and Yom Tov versus the Tchumin, that Yom Tov you have a requirement to go see your Rebbe if you're within a Tchum Shabbos of him or if you're able to get there by Erev Tchumin and Rosh Chodesh you have to go even further on the other hand. Anyway, loikash, the Gemara says, it's not a problem. Hada azov asibi yomei. One is talking about where you're able to go and come back the same day. So then Rabbi Eliezer agrees. Yes, you have to be makabel upon him of your Rebbe on Yom Tov. Hada azov aloy asibi yomei. The other case is talking about where you would go, but you can't come back the same day. In this case, the expression was that Rabbi Eloy went to be makabel upon him of Rabbi Eliezer. The implication is that he went to stay there the whole Yom Tov, the whole because he wasn't able to get back home. It was outside the Tchum, so therefore Rabbi Eliezer is telling him you should have stayed home. Whereas if he had been within a Tchum Shabbos and he could get back the same day, then yeah.
Rabbi Eliezer calls himself.
No. What does it mean when Rabbi Eliezer? He's not quoting himself. The Gemara is interjecting. What did Rabbi Eliezer mean? Ein chamishayv se regel. Or what is shayv se regel supposed to mean? The fact that Rabbi Eliezer himself said that a person is supposed to be shayv on regel. Turn it up on him. We learn in a brisa. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Eliezer shavas b'Galil Elyon. One time it happened that Rabbi Eliezer stayed over for Shabbos in the upper Galil. B'sukkaseh shal Yochanan b'Rabbi Eloi b'Kesari. In the sukkah of Yochanan b'Rabbi Eloi in Kesari. Ra'amri lo b'Kesarion. Or to say the city was Kesarion. Whatever. These are two places in Eretz Yisrael. B'yigir chamal sukkah. And
it was in Galil Elyon.
In the Galil Elyon. So obviously, evidently, we're not talking about the famous Kesari, the famous Caesarea, because that's on the coast. Right. It must be a different one, yeah. Apparently, it's not the famous case, are you right? Anyway, the sun was starting to reach towards the sukkah. Amaloi, so Yochanan asks, am I allowed to spread out a sheet over the sukkah? Now, Rashi actually says, we're not actually talking about the question of sukkahs. We're not actually talking about is it an impossible sukkah. Rashi says, is it a problem of making adding to an oil ara? You have a temporary tent over here already, over the sukkah, a temporary covering over the sukkah, and I'm going to add to it. Is that allowed? On Shabbos. Yeah, because we said Shabbos, right. Tosfos discusses earlier in the Masechta the issue. I mean, what do you need that for? I mean, he should be asking from the point of view of Sukkos. So we'll say later in the Gemara, not necessarily did the story happen Sukkos, but I'll tell you in a bit a very interesting thing, a very interesting explanation that the Taz gives on this whole story. So he asks, am I allowed to spread a sheet over it? Instead of answering him directly, Rabbi Eliezer says to him, Amalai, Ein lecha kol shevet shevet Yisrael, shall I have no man or shevet? You should know something, there's not a single shevet among the Jewish people who that a shevet did not arise from him. And Rashi goes through the list. If we look through the list of shevetim in Sefer Shevetim, most of them it identifies what shevet they're from. Then you have most of the shvatim are accounted for. There's a few of them, Rashi says, there's a few of them that we don't know what shevet they're from. And conversely, there's a few shvatim that we don't clearly find that there was a shevet from them. But basically, it comes out. So he didn't want to answer him, because as the Gemara will say soon, he didn't want to answer anything that he hadn't explicitly heard from his Rebbe. He gives Hamalach a Chasiyah Sukkah, then the Sukkah is reaching already halfway, the sun is reaching the half of the Sukkah. The fat half of the Sukkah is in the sunlight already. Amalai, so Yochanan asks again, Ma'ushafrit Allah sudden, am I allowed to spread out a sheet over it? And again, Rabbi Yezer evaded the question. Amalai, Ein l'chokol shevet, v'shevet mi'yisrael, shalei yasim men a Nevi'im. You should know, there's not a single shevet among the Jewish people that Nevi'im did not come from it. The Gemara says in Megillah, besides the 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'os that are actually mentioned in Tanakh, there were millions of others, there were over a million other Nevi'im, so every shevet had some. I'll tell you soon what the Taz says, and I'll tell you soon what other Mepharshim say. Shevet Yehuda and Binyamin, or even more than that, had midu malachim api nevim. Shevet Yehuda and Binyamin had kings come out from them who were established by nevim, namely Shaul and David. Were both crowned and anointed by Shmuel. Higiyah Chamal Magalois of Shor Abliyazah. The sun is creeping up further, and the sunlight is reaching Abliyazah's feet in the sukkah. Not the Yochanan sudden appears aloud. So Yochanan just took matters into his hand. He took the sheet and spread it out over the sukkah. Hipshor Abliyazah Talis La'achar of Yatzah. Abliyazah flung his talis behind him and left, because he did not want to say. Rashi says he didn't want to be matir. He didn't want to be matir the thing. And
on
the sukkah. On the sukkah. So Rashi says he didn't want to be matir it, and on the side over here, on the schachet. And in Masoros HaShas here, it brings a slightly different version that he didn't want people to think that he had been matir it.
That's why he didn't know.
That's why he left. Now, loy mipnei sheflug b'dvarim, you should not think he was just trying to evade him with words, like just giving nonsense answers because he didn't know the answer. Because he never said anything that he did not hear from his Rebbe. So now, what taka is going on over here? So the Taz gives a very interesting explanation. Based on, we just said that Rashi seems to imply there would not have been a problem of it from the point of view of Sukkot, only from the point of view of Shabbos, whereas Tosfos argues that, at least in some cases, putting a sheet on the Sukkah is a problem with Sukkot. So the Taz explains like this. There's three situations. There is, you put, when it comes to Sukkot, and also, therefore, when it comes to Shabbos, you can have a case where putting on a sheet actually passes the Sukkah, namely, when the sun is nowhere near the Sukkah, yeah? You can have a case where it's Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, whether you're allowed to put a sheet on without passing the Sukkah, and then you can have a case where the sun is already reaching into the Sukkah, where you're allowed to put on a sheet according to everybody and you don't pass the Sukkah, because then it's considered like Noi Sukkah, then it's considered like a decoration for the Sukkah.
So the
Taz goes on to say, wherever it would be a problem for Sukkah, would also be a problem as far as Oil Arai on Shabbos, and wherever not, then not. So he says like this, the first time when the sun is nowhere near the Sukkah, and Yochanan asks about putting up the sheet, Rabbi Eliezer did not want to directly answer him, again, because he didn't hear from his Rebbe what the din is in this case, but he hinted at by saying, you should know, he says, when we say every shevet had shoftim come from it, there is actually one exception. Shevet Shimon never had a shevet from it. Why? Because Shevet Shimon, we know the story by Baal Peor, the story of Zimri. Because of that, they lost their privilege of having a shevet come from them. What happened by Shevet Shimon? Rashi says, "But how did they know who were the guilty ones?" Whoever was choited by Baal Peor, the Anania covered peeled away from above them. So therefore, in other words, Shevet Shimon, like, they destroyed the Anania covered. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is hinting to him at this point: if you were to put a sheet on the sukkah, you would be destroying the schach, which is the equivalent of the Anania covered. So don't do it. Don't be like Shevet Shimon. Later on, the sun is already starting to creep into the sukkah. Half the sukkah is already in the sunlight. So he asks him again. At that point, the machlokas Rashi and Tosfos whether you can put on a sheet. So he tells him, you know what? Every shevet had neviim, as if to imply. In other words, listen, you know, there are different deists on the subject. The same way as there are different neviim among Jewish people. Jewish people are not neviim themselves, but they're bnei neviim. You're going to say in that case then, well, so if you have a machlokas, somebody's got to be wrong, no? No. You see, for example, that Shmuel anointed Shaul, and later, a couple of years later, he anointed David, and it wasn't a contradiction, because Abish had told him to do one, and Abish had told him to do the other. So the same thing, the fact that you have Rashi and Tosfos arguing, or whichever Chachamim of Rabbi Eliezer's time, arguing on this point, it doesn't mean one of them is wrong. So again, he's hinting to him by that. The third time, when the sun is already way into the sukkah, then Yochanan puts up the sheet, which, fine, both Rashi and Tosfos agree it's fine. But Rabbi Eliezer, because he didn't hear from his Rebbe, therefore he left the sukkah rather than actually agree to it. Ah, so that's a different thing. Before Shem talk about. So what does it mean? We have all over the place. Rabbi Eliezer says things. So there's many different explanations. We'll talk more about it tomorrow. But one of them is that one answer that's given is Rabbi Eliezer was careful about this as long as his Rebbeim were alive. After his Rebbeim passed away, then already he felt freer to say things to say things in his own name. Things that he hadn't explicitly heard from his Rebbeim. The Rebbe once talked about it in a sikha. The Rebbe discussed that there's a difference between halacha, which is what we're dealing with over here, actual practical halachas, versus la poshala, versus discussions in halacha, versus discussions in Torah, pilpul in Torah. That, of course, he would do his own. He's a bursur chenim abatipa. He's, you know, a cistern that doesn't lose even a drop. So, of course, he's going to be mechadish in Torah. But only when it, not when it involves practical halacha, that he sticks to what he heard from his Rebbeim. Anyway, So the question is, we're asking Heichi Obed Hachi. So going back to the original story, he's sitting in Yochanan ben Rabbi Eloi's sukkah in Kesari, and we assume that this is, well, if he's in a sukkah, it must be sukkahs. Heichi Obed Hachi, how can you do that? Rabbi Eliezer, any yotz in the sukkah of sukkah. Rabbi Eliezer said he can't leave one sukkah for another. So what's he doing? Spending one Shabbos of sukkahs in Yochanan's sukkah. The answer is regal acharav. Well, it was a different yomtiv. It wasn't sukkahs. Even during other Yom Tov, a person might sit in the sukkah partially for shade, to cool off. So imagine Shavuos time, for example, is it's hot, so you sit in a sukkah just to have the fresh air. Okay, the question is, well, Rabbi Eliezer Meshabech Ani Asat Lon and Shein Yotzim Matan Berdegel. But Rabbi Eliezer said that I praise the lazy people who don't leave their houses on Yom Tov. So if it was any other Yom Tov, he's still not supposed to be leaving his house in the middle of it. The answer is Shabbos Havoy. It wasn't a Yom Tov at all. It was Shabbos. It was a Shabbos during the year. So in other words, the issue, again, then the issue was not had nothing to do with the schach, because it wasn't sukkahs at all. It was a regular Shabbos, the issue. That's why Rashi said the issue is only whether you're allowed to add to an oil aray. Well, if that's the case, the Gemara asks, v'tif shet lemi didei, then why didn't he answer based on his own opinion? That you're not allowed to. Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, p'kakachaloin, a board that's used to close up a window, like a window shutter. Rabbi Eliezer, I remember, is man shakosher v'toloi pokekin boi, only if it's tied to the window and it's hanging off the floor, where then you clearly see that it's meant as a window shade, then pokekin boi, then you're allowed to close the window with it. V'im lav, and pokekin boi, if not, then you're not allowed to, because it would be adding to an oil. Even though it's a temporary thing, you're going to take it down later. But Rabbi Eliezer is saying you're not allowed to unless it's clearly indicated that's meant for that purpose.
Even if it's pre-stopping from the floor?
Yeah, it doesn't matter how far it is from the floor, apparently, as long as it's hanging off the floor. The Chum say either way you're allowed to close up with it. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer should have answered based on his own opinion that you're not allowed to put up the sheet. Or some Mepharshim explain that actually what the Gemara means is Rabbi Yochanan should have realized that he knows Rabbi Eliezer's shitta about putting on a window shade, so he himself should realize that Rabbi Eliezer says you can't put up the sheet. The answer is Hasam Hu Demavato. That's different. And it comes to a window shade, you arm a vato it in place. Once you put it in, it looks like part of the wall. So yes, maybe therefore you could consider that that's adding to an oil. But here with a sheet, everybody knows you're not mevatel it. Eventually, you're going to take it down. So therefore, lo, you might have thought that not, and that's why he had to ask.